Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are both based in the Midwest and are also based. And they're figuring it out as they make their way through life and comedy and everything in between. There might also be some hip-hop talk in there every now and then. You know, we just like to be balanced. We like to spread it around. You know, we're multi-layered. We're complex individuals, and we bring all of those levels to the podcast. My name is Matt Alana Martin. With me, as always, is Dwight Simmons. Dwight, how are you today?
I am wonderful. Thank you for that beautiful intro. Not just hip-hop. Sheryl Crow for the our middle, I'll call it the middle rounds of the podcast.
Sure.
But yeah, man, I'm doing well. Got home from Louisville on Sunday, so needed a recovery day yesterday. Got into the brown liquor down there a little heavy.
All right, well, it is bourbon appreciation month, so you picked the right time to come down.
They had their bourbon festival going on too, so it was just kind of nuts.
You're the same weekend as Bourbon and Beyond, the big huge music festival, one of a couple big music festivals that they have down here in this time of year. So do you feel like that affected your draw, or did you have people coming out to see you do comedy before they went and saw Bruno Mars?
Was Bruno there?
Bruno was the headliner. Oh, that's Sunday. Dope. I would have liked to see Bruno Mars, yeah, but I didn't want to pay like a whole festival thing to see it, you know?
Yeah. I think I am the only thing that affects my draw.
Okay.
We're not going to blame it on old Bruno, but so last week I said I had that show at Spinelli's Pizza, which you said was terrible.
I said I thought for some reason in my brain I said it's associated with bad pizza. Was I right?
Well, the show the day before got moved to a different location.
Okay.
Probably because they heard you talking shit on the podcast.
That's the kind of reach that we have, you know.
Yeah. It was like the next day. But there's Matt getting wild again. Getting loose lip. No, they apparently they had a COVID outbreak. Spinelli's there. So we went over the bridge to Jeffersonville and did that. It was like a little dive bar and had about 20 people come out, and it was super fun. It was outside, had a lot of family come. And then the day before I did two Don't Tell shows in LaGrange, Kentucky. You familiar with LaGrange?
I'm familiar with the ZZ Top song LaGrange, which I don't think is about the one in Kentucky. I believe it's a city in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. But
it'd be weird if it was this LaGrange.
Okay.
It's built around this railroad museum. It's like a little knick-knack town with the railroad going straight through like the downtown area. Like when you're driving to the show, you kind of have to like go back and forth between train tracks.
I have been to LaGrange because one time the interstate, it's east of Louisville, right? It's between Louisville and Lexington, kind of. Yeah. Yep. So, the interstate was completely shut down, and so they rerouted us through LaGrange. So, like, imagine all of interstate traffic being rerouted through that little knick-knack town. Like,
oh my god!
Yeah, it took forever. It took forever to get through like their little tiny ass town because there was like, you know, I don't know, 300% increase in traffic.
Yeah. You probably had to wait for like several large cargo trains to move through.
Yeah, that too.
So the shows were at the museum, like the railroad museum. So really cool, unique space, tiny room, but perfect because first show we had like 18 and then the second show was like sold out. We had about 40 people in there.
And so these are on the same night, the early show, Malaysia. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Same night. The museum's like completely staffed by volunteers. They have like the historic trains outside the World War II vet coming up giving me a history lesson while I'm trying to get my set together.
Are you telling me that the volunteers for the train museum aren't like young Gen Z kid? You tell me it's no. These volunteer positions of the tour guides.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
If you grow up in LaGrange, like you live like a Dawson's Creek type of life. It's probably very insulated. You have the same summer job since until you go to like college. But yeah, this guy, this World War II vet, was very interested in the show, and he's like so excited. And then he's just like spitting facts, and he's like, "This side of the museum used to be this. This is where the trains would come in." And then he hit me with the old, I don't want to be insensitive, but, and that's never a good start.
But yeah, I was going to say.
Never a good start.
Yeah, I don't know. So what did he follow that up with?
I'll give you the SparkNote version, but he said, so where we were doing the show, there's like kind of a hallway between there and where the comics were hanging out in the entrance. And we were like in that entrance. And he was like, "This used to be the colored section." And
I was going to guess that, but then I thought, no, come on.
Yeah, you would have knocked it out of the park if I gave you the guess. But
yeah.
Yeah, he was like, "This used to be a colored section." And he said, "Listen, listen, I didn't make the rules." But and he's like talking about like how that side didn't have any air conditioning. It was just like this cracker box that.
Well, it's the opposite of a cracker box.
Nice. Like.
Thank you.
Nice. Huh?
Thank you. Yeah.
Got all they asses.
That was the other side. The other side was the cracker box.
But yeah, and then he like backpedaled and talked about flying in Vietnam. I found out about his prostate exam, and then I went up unable to put a set list together because I could not shake this dude.
Wait, couldn't shake him. So two things. One, did he have his prostate exam done in Vietnam? Was that one story or were those two separate stories?
It was kind of intertwined. He's like, because it was like we experienced
jumping back and forth. Yeah,
yeah, he's like oh man, complex.
Two worst traumatic things that he went through.
He's like, eight, like he gave some percentage of men that experienced Agent Orange over there, and came back, and he's like,
"Yeah, affect your prostate? Does it Agent Orange?"
I guess so.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that at all.
Blame everything on the Agent Orange.
He's like, I flew with everybody of every race and I never gave a damn. And I was like, that's good for you, man.
Yeah.
And I shook his hand.
And then I went up and he kept talking to you.
And I went up and said the N-word a bunch. Not on the colored section.
No.
No, this is in the cracker box.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, my other thing is, like, do you think that this was the spirit? Because you were doing a show in Kentucky, so do you think this is just the ghost of Tom Sobel, like, just entered that man and is like, you know what every comedian needs is they need to be distracted and talked to while they're trying to prepare their set. They just need to have someone relentlessly just chewing their ear off.
Yeah.
When they're clearly, they have their notebook out and everything, and they're clearly trying to get ready.
Yeah.
And I they need to hear my random bullshit.
Just so. My random bullshit. He pulled out his phone and got his photo app up, and he was scrolling through and showing me train graffiti. He's got this hobby now. So, didn't get to chat it up with the other comics on the show at all, but I think they did well. I didn't get to listen.
Yeah.
June Dempsey hosted, and she's very unique, very funny, and honestly a great host for her style of comedy. So she was on all three of the shows I did this weekend. But yeah, man, got to do three long sets in a weekend. It felt like a long time since I had done that, three. In a row, so to play around with that. Saturday was super goofy and silly. I was in a great mood. Went to the track, went to Churchill Downs.
Megan,
I won $6.
Nice.
Actually, Megan won $6. I was down for the day.
Okay.
Not good. I don't know how to read the gambling stats on in like in the gambling book. So I just picked
the form,
my name,
the race, the big. Yeah, whatever the race form. Yeah.
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 I just go by name.
Yeah. So. I think a lot of people do that. A lot of people, unless you actually are following horses' careers,
right,
and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, most people just bet based on the name or the number if they have like lucky. It's all superstition, dude.
Yeah. And it was fun, and I was in a great mood. It was a beautiful weekend down there, and then got to drink some bourbon because some of the family came from Wisconsin and Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. It's just Wisconsin nights. Love that festival, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of coincided. I actually booked these shows so I could go to Louisville to kind of like bankroll that weekend. So
nice.
But they turned out to be fun shows and I think productive.
Good. Yeah. So. Right. That's what's up. You're having a heck of a week, man. You've known a lot of this for a while, but you just flexed on every other comedian in your timeline. You dropped six photos. A couple of them are like pretty big festivals that you're going to do that, people, you know, like 10,000 Laughs and then Flyover. Was there a third one? Was there a third festival that you
dropped? I'm doing Milwaukee.
Yeah, Milwaukee. Yeah. So all like, you know, festivals that should be on every comedian's bucket list and their radar. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm just a couple of things I got coming up. And also 1 million views. You're a million view man now.
I know, one clip, 1 million views means absolutely nothing outside of, like you said, just
nice. Do like five or six more times and then you'll get some followers and then
and then the bar will move again and I still don't know how that happened on that particular clip. Like, it was so weird. I'm not gonna talk about it again, but what's funny is the clip I submitted to these festivals, I was like going back and forth, but now it's validation that it was a good clip.
Yeah.
So,
obviously, yeah, you got into a bunch of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you got like High Plains, Flyover, 10,000 Laughs. Not High Plains. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Flyover, then I'm hosting for Let's Fest, but that's just because I live in
the other one. Yeah.
Indianapolis.
Yeah, but that looks like it's shaping up to be great too. We have some really great headliners and everything for that one. Good field, so should be a good time. Do you get to walk to your show for Let's Fest? Is it close enough you can just walk down there?
No.
Okay.
No, but I can take the bus.
I was going to say, we have them send you a car. You know.
Yeah. As the
get
host.
That car service. Get the car service for the host. You know.
As the host, that's so funny. I haven't. So I think I've said this, but I hadn't submitted in a couple of years to any festivals. So I just, you know, I'd rather use those weekends for paid work than like the I don't know the ideal, but at the beginning of this year when it was time to submit to everything, just felt like kind of in a rut, and to give me a little I don't know, boost, it'd be nice to have like some new 10-minute sets that are hot for these.
Well, and I think there's a couple of things too, which is, yes, you can add to the credits list. Although, you know, at this point, when you've done as many festivals and things as we have, yes, it's nice to always add some new ones, you know, and some, but I mean, that's to a certain extent, it doesn't mean as much as when it's your first couple of festivals. Like, oh, I've done some festivals, you know.
Right.
But it does, you're going to meet comics that you otherwise wouldn't have met, and that shit pays dividends down the road with like getting hooked up with shows and their scenes and things like that. I always try to do like, I submit to like between like one to three festivals every year just to do it. And just like, I like to always like, let's just do one each year. If we can just kind of do one, you know? Right. But yeah, I'm with you. I'd rather get paid. Because you're also, you know, at festivals, you're doing short sets. It's not as satisfying. You know, it's much more about the hang, which I know you're way more into than I am, but as like an old sober guy, like I'm down to hang till like 8:15.
I'm down to hang past the host of the first show.
But man, that's great. That's awesome. And the million view thing, hopefully you'll get a few more, and you know, it will move the needle, because I mean, you know, sometimes that's what it takes, you know, just a couple of those clips and you start to get the follower count up. And
Well, we talked about like the crescendo of like kind of everything kind of coming together at once, and so I guess this is a small version of that, because you know, 363 days out of the year you don't get to flex at all. So take your 2 days that you get.
Yeah.
And it really was like,
and then share it every year when it's this year ago memory.
You remember when I did that?
Oh, that was a good day.
You remember when I did that? Yeah. Yeah, it was, I feel good. Like the sets that I did this weekend felt good. Sold a little bit of merch. So progressing along, man.
Cool, man.
Yeah. What about you?
I was up in Minneapolis at Comedy Corner Underground, and it was definitely a lot better than the last time I was there when we had like maybe, I don't know, like 9 people at one show, and then we had to cancel the other one because literally nobody came.
Yeah.
Because it was Labor Day weekend. It was the state fair. It was all these, you know, excuses that we use. But I will say, like, someone was telling me another story of like, you know, just how drastically devastating summer is for those northern states for doing shows. And they were, I'm not going to say who, because I'm not trying to, you know, embarrass them, but it was comforting me that like a comic who's much bigger than me with a lot more credits than me. I think they were there like 4th of July weekend or something like that. And like, same thing, like nobody came to one, they had to cancel one of the shows, and the other one had like barely the minimum. Because it's just, you know, people don't want to go down into a little basement, dark basement, when it's, you know, beautiful out for like, you know, one of the 6 weeks of nice weather that they get. So I was happy with how our turnout went. But this weekend, I had like the Friday show. I don't know. We had like 20 something pre-sales. And then I don't know how many walk-ups we had, probably not much more than that. And then the next night we had something like 16 pre-sales and a few more walk-ups. So
solid.
Yeah, it was good. And really, really strong comics on both shows. Ellie Hino did a set on the Friday show. Ryan Call did a set on the Saturday show. It was good to see like old friends.
Love, yeah.
Also. Yep. And yeah, man, it was good. The Friday show, like I had a really good set. And then the Saturday show, there was about 8 people out of that 20 or so who were one group who really wanted to be part of the show.
Oh, man.
And to the credit of the younger comics that went up before me, they all like handled it really well without like encouraging them and just kind of tried to get back out of dealing with them and get in. So I had to deal with them to a certain extent. Like it was one of the things, like after the end of my 45-minute set, of having to every so often to like give them a little bit and then kind of come back into my own shit. A couple of the comics were like, dude, you're a pro. Like I would have lost my shit on them. Yeah. And it's like, well, but they weren't being mean-spirited. They were just, you know, people about my age, like late 40s, early 50s, people from the suburbs. You know, we established that when I was having to do crowd work with them, that were just like, oh, it's just like, why isn't it about us? You know? Right. And so it still was good. Like both the shows felt good. I did not do what my original plan was, which was to focus more on a clean set, because as I went to look for material to replace that 5 minutes that I had to take out of there, I just don't have it. It's like I have other stuff that is technically clean or would be clean for most clean things, but not to that level, not to that dry bar level.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, I just need to start writing some jokes for it or whatever, or just table this until I've accumulated some more clean jokes and be like, okay, now we can give this another try.
Yeah.
Which I don't know which way I'm going to go. I'm currently writing jokes for this roast that I'm going to be on and coming up, which I finally wrote a joke that I'm like, this is a good joke. It's just outside of the realm of a roast. It's a good joke.
Oh, like you can keep it?
Yeah, I think it's directed towards somebody and on the roast, obviously the person that I'm going head to head against, but I could make it about just a big third party person. It's still kind of a mean thing, but it's just like, to me, it's actually clever.
Okay.
So many roast jokes aren't that clever.
Right.
You know? And so to me, I was like, this is actually, and I texted it to somebody and they're like, that's a great joke. Yeah. Like it was like, okay, cool. All right. Like, so I felt better about this process. I have been watching a ton of like, I let the TikTok algorithm just start showing me a bunch of like clips from Comedy Central roasts from over the years and stuff, which, you know, I'd seen those back in the day. And so, but just to kind of get my mind in that mode, because it's a specific type of joke writing.
Yeah.
Like they have to be short, they have to be punchy, they have to be like real, you know. And so it's been interesting seeing like all these different approaches to it, you know, from someone who's very, very mean, like Jimmy Carr,
right,
to people that are more playful about it, or, you know, or people that are even like roasting the roast itself, kind of like, what are we doing here?
So, Andy Samberg, that was like, and, say something very mundane, like your shirt's yellow and you look bad in it. Boom. Got you.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And so I've just been soaking my brain in that. So I'm not really focusing on the queen jokes right now, but I do think that is going to be maybe my goal for, like, by the end of the year. Like, let's try to really write another 5 to 10 super clean that I like. That's the other part of it, you know. Like, I mean, I could bring back some stuff. I just don't want to bring, like, you know, like some social media jokes that I had back in the day that were very clean.
Right.
It's just like, I just don't want to talk about Facebook. Like, yeah, I mean, just don't.
It takes time unless you are on like a actual time crunch.
Right.
To get this done, I think it's worth it to take the time to like find stuff that you're excited about. And like, I think it's also like it changes. Like, you're changing the way you write because you're kind of self-censoring. And that's not something that you typically are used to. And that could be a frustrating process.
Yeah, I think it's one of these things, too, where because I don't do a lot, you know, there's a lot of gimmick shows where you have to write a specific style, or you write material just for this one show and then you toss it all, you know, which there are a lot of comics who do that. And a lot of people who are sort of 1 foot in the improv sketch world and 1 foot in the stand-up world. Those are the ones who tend to do a lot of those shows. And I've never done it because it's not my strong suit. And so, you know, again, the whole reason I'm just doing this roast is just like, okay, it's stage time and it's $50.
Right.
And it's like right down the road from my brother's place on a Sunday night when I would be back down here anyway.
Right.
And so it's like, all right, I might as well just go do it. And so I'm going to try and be a little bit more proactive, like as treating it like an assignment. It's a writing assignment. After I get done with my writing assignment of these roasts, writing clean material is going to be the self-given writing assignment. And I just realized also my mic has not been plugged in this entire time. So if you hear a massive audio quality jump.
Oh man, I'll have to turn up the volume a little bit, but
at this point
I've been smashing my volume up button, but I think it's fine.
Okay, all right, sorry about that. Yeah, and there's also like I'm running the dishwasher, which is not very far away from me, so it's going to sound like I was doing my first part of this podcast I was recording from a submarine. And I don't know this. I think this PlayStation controller is a perfectly good way to steer this submarine. And I don't know what you guys are talking about.
We're good.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But anyway, so I'm just going to try and hold myself accountable to that of writing that clean material. And then with the idea of like early in the new year, get it on tape, get like a clean, super clean, dry bar clean 30 on tape to submit, you know, because I mean, what else am I going to do? Like, why not? Why not? Like, seriously, of all the things that I don't like to do, like, I'm still very on the fence about the social media stuff. Like, you know, Comedy Corner Underground has like a 4-camera setup now and you get your tapes and stuff. And so like, I was like, I should clip all that shit up when I get the tapes and you know, like I can, you know, and so, and the Friday night show, I think I could do a lot of because it was pretty strong all the way through. I got a little wobbly in the middle because I didn't go up with the set list, so I had to do a little bit of like, oh, let's see what else, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. But were you talking to a war veteran before your show or something?
Yes, and that war veteran was Bob Edwards.
that tracks. My man has seen some shit.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so that's how the weekend was. I'm just trying to stay mindful, and you know, and it was, you know, it was good to get back out there. I'm going back to Minnesota again this weekend. I normally would have stayed up there for the whole like 10 days. But I had to come back, a couple of different reasons, but, I had to come back for a couple of days in between. So a lot of long drives between last week and this week,
no doubt.
But then I have next week off, so I'll get a little bit of recovery for sure. But yeah.
Yeah, those are marathon drives, man. Like most of your clean sets just going to be about how weird driving through Missouri is. Or not Missouri.
I took the scenic route. I took the long way around.
I made it longer. I don't know why my mind was picturing going to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Because I hate that drive so much, maybe. So maybe. So you want to just get these dates out of the way?
Yeah, so we can go and talk about it. Yeah, so this coming weekend, the 22nd and 23rd, I'll be at Goonies in Rochester, Minnesota. If you come and see me on the 23rd, I will probably be pretty exhausted because Kelly is bringing MJ and Kristoff down with her for the day, and I'll have been on uncle duty to a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old all day long. Which is what every comic wants. That's what every comic wants right before they. I mean, I'm just like, it's dope to see him and everything, but I'm just like, oh, that's that Saturday show. I'm gonna have to be like slamming the Diet Coke or something to just kind of get through it, you know?
That level of energy expended is a rough thing to recover from.
Yeah.
So,
but that's cool, that's where I'm gonna be. And then you have your Vonnegut thing coming up, right?
Yep. This weekend, I'll be doing spots all around DC. Just random ass spots. And then that's the 22nd and 23rd. I'll be in the Baltimore and DC area. And then on the 28th, I'm hosting the kickoff show for Let's Fest happening at the White Rabbit at 7:30. Excited for that. And then the Kurt Vonnegut Gala on the 29th, also in Indianapolis. And then I'm going back to the Story Inn in Nashville, Indiana. To do that show. That's always fun. So all those dates are on DwightSimmons.com. Come see your boy.
Nice. So there was something I was going to talk about, like just general comedy business stuff, but I can't remember now it was.
Can we talk about this week's comedy gossip or drama? High drama?
Sure. Do I even know about the comedy
drama? I don't
know.
Have we texted
about it?
No. Did you see so two of them.
Mm-hmm.
First, the Hasan Minhaj.
I saw someone share just the headline of it.
Yeah.
So he apologized for
I'm not
making stuff up, but exaggerating details in his stories in his stand-up.
Yeah, I guess so. Like I haven't done any research for this podcast, but why would I do that?
Yeah. What are you, Brent Terhune? Come on.
So there's two like very formative bits about him. You know, it's like more war stuff that he's kind of falsified timelines. And there's a big bit of his where he talks about his prom date in high school that ended up getting this woman like doxxed and all her information got out, and he just really didn't seem to give a shit that much. So that was a big one. You're like, that's kind of shitty. And then I guess the writer of this article was just trying to like, I don't know why anyone would do this, go through a comics set and then try to fact check everything, but with these very personal bits, just finding out that they are either completely not true or just embellished. And Hassan's just like obviously a great storyteller. That's a big part of his comedy. But yeah, man, people had opinions. People were mad that he kind of embellished to this level and just didn't really care about the consequences or just like flat out lied in his material, which. Yeah. It's very interesting because if you're just doing like crazy off the wall jokes, I don't think anyone cares. But if people are coming to see you for your own personality, then there's this level of mistrust you've built with your own audience. But I didn't know if you saw that or had any
thoughts. Well, I'm kind of reading. I'm reading a lot now, and it's definitely more because I just dismissed it from the headline. I thought it was just like, you know, like, oh, someone's mad because a comic is embellishing something. But the more that I'm reading this story on Slate, which is kind of, or I guess it's an op-ed on Slate about the story that broke.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of it is pretty over the top fabrication.
Right.
And sort of defended around this idea that he's telling emotional truths as opposed to factual truth, I guess.
Those are his words, right? Or no.
Yeah. Let's see, something like that. Yeah.
Emotional truths.
Yeah. Which is weird because I mean, you know, like I think there's a line for sure, You can't just be blatantly making stuff up. Apparently, he just made up an entire story about rushing his daughter to the emergency room, fearing that she had been exposed to anthrax.
Yeah.
From a threatening letter. Apparently, that was completely false. And then the thing that you were talking about, apparently, he had a white high school classmate who had rejected him, was the story that he told.
Okay.
Which that's the lady who wound up getting doxxed and digitally harassed by his fans. And it never happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's super fucked up.
Yeah, to use a real person.
Yeah. Or yeah, like, exactly. Why wouldn't you change their name? Why wouldn't you make up a fake name?
Oh, not even that he had to make up. Yeah. Not even that he had to say the name in the bit.
Right, exactly.
It's like someone could have just gone to his like high school yearbook and saw a picture of them too.
Right, like, yeah.
The internet's shifty. I guess my point is like, why make that story up?
Yeah, I mean,
and then present it as like, I feel like when,
well, I think with the defense of the emotional truth, if he's using emotional truth as his defense, because he probably wanted to make a point about racism, right? And particularly in the dating world, which we all know exists, you know, and just like it exists in other parts of the world. And so, but yeah, to me, that's like crossing a line. Like the most fabrication that I've ever done on any joke that was about something real is, you know, like one of my albums ends with a story about my father and like reconnecting with my father. And then he has Lou Gehrig's disease and all that kind of stuff. I truncate like our actually reconnection was a couple of years long. I make it sound like it's a much shorter time because I don't have time to get into the back and forthness of it. And like, I just really boil it down to like the bare essentials. Everything I say in there is true.
Right.
He was this like rough and tough drinking biker guy when we were kids. Mm-hmm. When I reconnected with him, he'd become this ultra conservative right wing religious dude.
Yeah.
He did get ALS and he did write me that note. Like it's like sort of the big punchline or whatever the thing. All of that is completely true. I just, you know, I just removed nuance from it because, you know, there were times in our relationship when I reconnected where things were okay. Mm-hmm. And then there were times when we fought. And then, and I think in the first version of it, I tried to show this more well-rounded version of it. And I had to just ultimately like, no, I have to make this a little bit more two-dimensional. A, so that it's works, it's clear, it's not confusing, it's not back and forth. If I was doing a one man show, if I was doing a friend show about my dad, then I could have included all that stuff. But in a regular stand-up set, I'm already tackling something kind of difficult.
Yeah.
You know, in that bit of talking about emotional, sort of an emotional bit, then also I'm, you know, talking about a horrible disease, someone dying, and then him saying a terrible slur. Right. And I also just throw 9/11 in there too.
like you do.
I don't. Yeah. My dad did. So no, there's a lot of like heavy parts in there, right?
Right.
And so I had to just streamline it. So I think that's the farthest I've ever gone is in fabrication. Now, I mean, I will make up a silly bit that means nothing for nothing. That's just completely, like, I'm sure I have
100%
completely just jokety jokes.
You trust your audience to be smart enough that they know the difference between, like, I exaggerate a ton, like around real stories.
Yeah.
But trust the audience to know the difference with like where the exaggeration is versus what's true. And that's part of everyone's job as a comic.
Yeah.
And that's exaggeration or cutting the fat, which you were talking about, is different than complete fabrication presented as truth.
Yeah, particularly when it's, you're talking about something, complete fabrication that's presented as true, when you're talking about something like that is real world stakes, like racism and or sexism, or, you know, and particularly if you're just dropping some actual real person's name in there, man, that's like,
yeah, that's
boochly. That's some fucked up shit.
That's like what was that documentary about the COVID vaccine where they're like, go kill Fauci, but it was like, it's like on YouTube, it's like 31 minutes and they got like these fake doctors, but like, of course, millions of people believe this. Like, that's
right,
that's different than just I don't know,
I mean, well, the you have to come back to Steve Reznassi's claiming he was in the second tower at 9/11. Speaking of 9/11, a complete fabrication, like that for no reason. It's straight up stolen valor.
Yeah.
You know, like him trying to attach, you know, the fact that that guy continues to tour in headline. But I mean, of course, so do a bunch of rapists and stuff, too. So I
guess there are no penalties in this.
There's no penalties
in this game.
Yeah. I think the thing is, like, whether or not Hassan's audience, core audience and people who related to him, if they're going to feel betrayed.
Yeah. I like Hassan's. I didn't watch his last special yet, but I'm a fan and it just sucks because it takes a little bit away from turning like this tragic thing into a funny thing, which is one of the most it's like what I respect the most out of this type of comedy. It's like you were able to make this really fucking funny, and I know that it hurt and scared you in the moment. Like, that's not easy to do. But if you make up 75% of it, it gets a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. it's interesting. And of course, I think it's a gray area. I think he may have overstepped some bounds there. But also then there's shit like MSNBC News has an op-ed saying his fabrications could help white supremacy. And it's like, Jesus. Okay.
All right.
Get those clicks, baby. Come on. You know, you want to get those clicks.
Yeah.
All right. So I was not fully aware of that comedy drama, but that's my take on it. As I think, and if anyone's listening to this and doesn't realize this, I mean, I don't know a single comedian who doesn't elaborate or exaggerate here and there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's how you make jokes funny. And when I teach the comedy class, one of the things I tell them is like, don't let the truth hold you back from a great joke.
Yeah.
And I talk about this idea like, and this is, I think, true. I think almost everybody's jokes are somehow grounded in reality. Like the thing that made them think of this idea was something they saw or they read or something. There's some foundation of truth. But then, you know, what I tell the students is like, yeah, it's like if you have a funny thing happen to you, your goal is to get as big and laugh and as many laughs as you can. So kick it out into the ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing, like, you know, I'll use a personal example. Like, I have an older bit where I talk about my friend Katie starts staring at something behind me while we're having lunch. And I look out front and, like, I can see crossing the street as a little person with a prosthetic leg and a mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And I turn around and tell her to stop staring, blah, 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 blah. Right. And she says, I think I know him. And I was like, I think you'd know if you knew him. Right.
Yeah.
The guy did not have a mohawk. It was a little person with a prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
But I just added a third, even more singular, ridiculous identifier that would make that person stand out from any other little person with a prosthetic leg.
Right.
To make the point, you know, and that kind of stuff is like very, you know, that's what everybody does. Everybody finds a little bump here and there, detail or something you can add that's like makes it funnier.
But that's different than I'm in an interracial marriage, and when I was at a club in Seattle, the owner called me the N-word. Like, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But you see what I mean? Like, that's
the level of what he did. Doing. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not adding a detail. That's a completely different story about a person that people could find very easily.
Right, exactly. So
I'd like to apologize to all the comedy club owners in Seattle. I would love to come to your city. Please book me. Or I'll call you a racist.
All right. So that's, I didn't know that. Do I even know the other comedy drama? I've been out of the loop, I guess.
Oh, this is like just, I don't know if this is recycled, but it's resurfaced. Russell Brand.
But are we even calling him a comedian anymore at this point? Like, he hasn't been a comedian in forever. He's been like a cult leader or whatever.
Have for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't consider that comedy.
Yeah,
related. I find that more like
other comics were affected, so
okay,
that's why. Because he
signs, how are other comics affected?
Because other comics are saying that he sexually assaulted them or tried to.
Okay, I didn't know it was. I just saw that women had come out that, you know, like he was being accused of rape and sexual assault and things like that. But I didn't know they were female comedians. I thought it was just. Again, I don't read more than the headlines, baby.
You and me both. That's why this is the most well-researched podcast. We'll figure it out along the way.
Welcome back to vague recollections and guesstimates with Matt and Dwight. I don't know. It could be about that, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Does he even do comedy anymore? He's going to tour off of this.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, my thought on that is rape and sexual assault are bad. And
we've said it once. We've said it twice. Don't rape.
Yeah.
No rules. But yeah, that's my, those were the big comedy dramas that I had for the week.
Okay.
They were so big that I researched them thoroughly.
Yeah. I'm now looking up the rest of my stuff.
Yeah.
YouTube blocks him from making money through its platform. That's 6 hours ago. BBC is investigating if Russell Brand's used its taxis to collect 16-year-old girlfriend.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yikes. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay. Man.
All right.
Sorry to get depressing on the pod here.
Anyway. Should we go to the question of the week?
I think it's time.
Yeah.
It'd be a travesty if we stayed on this any longer.
Yeah, exactly. All right. This comes from frequent questioner, and listener of the podcast, Nate Beckman. Thank you, Nate, for sending in another one. MND, as a stand-up enthusiast, but not a performer, I have always been impressed by how comics remember so much material. I have given talks that at work that run 30 to 40 minutes, but they took months of preparation built on usually a couple of years of experience. What methods work for you when it comes to remembering your bits? And he signs it as Florida man, but I know Nate, and he just happens to live in Florida. He's the most non-Florida man, Florida person I know. So he got all his teeth. He listened to good music. You know, he got a good job.
Yeah. He's never fist fought an alligator.
He raised his kids. You know, what I'm saying?
He raised his kids. Good for you, NB.
So I have my approach, and I think also why it's different for him than it is for us. But what do you want to say about this? What's your take on this?
Well, I have very long bits, and I visualize, so kind of like a storytelling style. Mm-hmm. And then I just lie. I guess this is tricky because when you're working out something, like a longer bit or set, it's normal to forget tags.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, listening to it back or watching yourself on tape becomes really important. Even if you don't do storytelling, if you're just trying to build like a 15-minute set, mm-hmm. It's just really important to watch things back, because so many times I've gone on stage and as soon as I walk off, it's like, ah, shit, I forgot that tag. I forgot that joke. I forgot how my set was supposed to go. So it's not just like, you know, you don't just write the joke and then it's ready. Mm-hmm. Like when he says months of preparation, like that's the exact same thing. It's right. Months of preparation.
But it's also the advantage that we get is he's talking about he gives a presentation like one time, right? Yeah. Or he gives talks at work or whatever, that he spends months like building up for it.
Yeah.
You know, that entire time while, you know, yes, you can rehearse to yourself in your house or whatever, but doing it in front of an audience in those sort of circumstances, it does just drill it into your brain. And also I think what you're talking about is different. Like, you know, maybe he's very passionate about his work and these presentations, but I know when I worked in an office job and mm-hmm. when I had to give a report or, you know, an annual report or whatever, like I cared enough in the fact that I didn't want to lose my job, you know?
Right.
Whereas in this, because yes, it is, comedy is our job, but it's also like our passion and it's a creative outlet and things like that. I find it easier to remember stuff. Because you're, again, it is also because we're constantly evolving it too. I think that makes it easier. Now, I did the exact same thing that you just talked about this last weekend. I, not on Saturday, but on Friday, I did do the stuff about my mom dying, but I completely skipped an entire joke in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, I don't know why I forgot that. And that's a chunk that has been evolving now for several months. And it just happens, you know. But I think, you know, it's, we're also in a different state, you and I, than like when we, like when we had our first 30 and we're first getting to do 30, then it was like very important you didn't skip over anything. Now, because we have so much old material, we're so good on stage, we can just kind of riff if we need to. Like, you know, like I was talking about before we started rolling, I think Friday I got a, my set got a little loose in the middle because I didn't take a set list up with me and I was tired from the drive and everything. And so I was just kind of like, oh, let's see, what else do I have? And then I was able to just pull old stuff out that I didn't really want to do.
Yeah.
And like buy myself time as I'm doing it to like get back into like, oh, right, I need to do this, this, and this. You know, and that's the perk that we have of being in the game for so long and having written so much material, is you just, you have it back there in case you need it, you know?
Right.
Even if it wasn't what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I think repetition is the big thing, is we get to perform it and grow it. Like, you know, if Nate was giving like a 5-minute version of this presentation, 4 weeks in a row, and then grew it to a 10-minute version of the presentation and did that for 4 weeks in a row and so on, then yeah, it's going to be pretty easy to remember it.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is I also, one of the reasons that I like being autobiographical in my material is it, not only do I find it easier to remember than just a joke that is just a word joke. Like when the joke that I wrote for this roast that I'm pretty proud of that I think is clever, it's just, it hinges on a very specific phrasing and everything. And so I'm going to have to really memorize it. Whereas, and if I just tell you the story of, you know, my nephew wanting to see my phone, freaking out and wanting to see my phone, I can do the wording for that a million different ways and still get the joke across.
Yeah.
Still get the punchline correctly. So we have a lot more leniency there. Whereas in like an office presentation, I think has to be kind of very structured.
Yeah. You know? you want to really focus on knowing what the points are, what the exact points. And like, what are we talking, like PowerPoint?
I don't know.
Follow the PowerPoint, baby. Let's just follow that PowerPoint. Let it be your guide. Let it be your guide.
Pre-record the vocals on the PowerPoint and just lip sync. Just get up there and just mouth along, you know?
Love that.
Yeah.
There are no rules. There are no rules in the office, right?
Yeah. You know, maybe you can be the first like crowd work presenter at your work, you know?
Yeah, loosen them up with some crowd work, because that's what they really want before you get.
So what do you do for a living, you say to your coworker, you know?
Oh, man.
I have a new bit that I'm pretty happy about that I have it's a bit that I'm now allowed to open up into like a moment of crowd work. Cause I had one before, which was really based around the idea of like, if anyone else has been married more than, you know, once, like I have been, I've now got a second one that's kind of new about this new sobriety joke. And man, like I just happened to like, in the moment at the Comedy Attic last weekend, the previous weekend, I just thought to ask the audience if anybody else, because it's about me blacking out and stealing things. One of the main reason I had to get sober is I kept blacking out and stealing things. And then I have a couple examples in the joke that are funny examples of things that I stole. But it occurred to me in the moment, it's like, I should ask the audience. So I asked, is anybody, and this one guy right up front shared his story. It's funny. I was like, great, this is going to be my new, man, every other audience when I've asked that, people have been like, even if someone's like, yeah, I do that too.
Yeah.
And you ask them like, what's the craziest thing you've ever stolen? They're like, nah, I don't want to talk. You know, like, yeah, no. Like, come on. I was counting on at least getting a good 30 to 60 seconds out of this. Come on.
Right. Right. That's funny. That's so great.
I'm going to keep it. And I'm wondering if I just need to change up the way that I structure the question part of it to get more. But the wedding, the marriage thing also was very hit or miss, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was one of those things, like in the same way that, you know, if you have a joke where you ask a question, you have to be prepared for all the different versions of the answer that could come as a comic.
Yep.
The same thing, like with this, like I kept it moving, you know, like Saturday I asked the question, they were kind of like a partying kind of crew. So I was like, oh, somebody's going to have a drunk story they want to tell me. And nobody wanted to volunteer that personal information. And so I was like, all right, cool. Well, here's my second example of the thing.
Yeah, into it.
Like, guys, like, all right, I give you my first one. Then I ask them and then like, oh, no, okay. But it is exciting to me to have that because, you know, the marriage stuff is stuff that I want to eventually retire. It was on the last album. And so, I don't know, like, To me, that's an interesting way to do crowd work, which has a built-in out, and it's not literally just trolling for something to happen so you can put it on TikTok, you know. Yeah. Not just like, so what do you do? Like, I don't, you know, like,
who gives a shit. It's nice to have these built-in check-ins with the crowd within your bits. It's just it's just an easy way to keep momentum, if not build it.
Yeah.
If not transition. Like, I do that on the special with the clip that got a million views. It's like, oh, you know, the push
alert. Is this going to be for the rest of it? Is this, you're going to bring up this clip every time now, just constantly talking about that. That one time I got a million.
Yeah, if it's one time, baby, then it's just one time.
It's been a whole 50 minutes since I praised you for this. Let's move on. Okay. No, you're right. Like, having audience check-ins, and the way that I have my set structure now, I am opening with like kind of an older, standard, easy opening joke. It's self-deprecating. It's everybody on board. But it is built in. There's a built-in check-in with the audience where I'm like, I'm talking about like my beard and my chin situation, all this kind of stuff. But there's like the way I've built it now is I talk about like I grew my beard back to hide my weak chin.
Yeah.
But I even like, I just even say to the audience, like, I just take a moment, like, but y'all can still see it, right? And then that always gets laughs, right? Some people nod their heads a little too much, you know? But it is this little moment right out of the gate where I'm like, I am addressing them and I'm including them. And it really has gone a long way to have, like, because I used to be real bad at starting so clunky and then just having to dig out.
Yeah.
And I still do that occasionally, but that was
like, starting your set.
Yeah, I would come out and immediately just say something weird or clunky or try to go right into material too quickly or whatever.
Yeah.
But that little as being my opening joke has really changed like the consistency of everybody. Like, because again, it's self-deprecating. So everybody kind of like knows that I'm okay with being laughed at.
Right.
You know, and I'm including them into it with y'all can still see it. Right.
Right.
Like, it just really, it just, I'm very, if I can give myself flowers, like, I know that everyone's always concerned about my mental health on this podcast. So I wrote a roast joke I like a lot, and I have figured out how to make an 8-year-old joke work as an opener finally. So
nothing ever dies.
Look out, guys. I'm on my way to the top.
Nothing ever dies.
Thank you for your question, Nate. We appreciate you writing in. Go ahead and send us that PowerPoint. We would love to learn this presentation.
Yeah, we'll punch it up for you.
Yeah. Yeah, we are available for punch up. That's true. If you out there would like to send us a question or just want to send us, you know, requests for punching up your, you know, we'll do it all. You've got your work presentation, your wedding speeches, your funeral speeches, you know, your proposals, you know, if you want to propose to somebody, Dwight and I, for a very reasonable fee, will add some jokes, you know. Yeah. You know,
we'll throw a cameo out there.
But this is like, yes, exactly. This is like a writer's cameo. There you go. Yeah. You can do that at our email address, which is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That pretty much does it for this week. Dwight, do you have anything else that you need to talk about?
I think we covered it all. Go check out our dates. We'd love you listening to the podcast, but we would love to see you at a live show. Send in those questions, and we will talk to you next week.
Goodbye.